Well, we're continuing our series this morning called Homeland Security, God's Truth Guarding Your Home. And we're going to talk today about how we communicate with each other. There won't be any water involved in the communication process today. We're going to hear some instruction today from the book of Ephesians about how we talk to each other and how we treat each other and how we love each other. And listen, this isn't just about husbands and wives. It's also about brothers and sisters. It's about moms and daughters and fathers and sons. It's about neighbors. It's about friends. It's about the person you're sitting next to right now. So this is a part of homeland security communication. I am no family therapist. I'm not an expert on relationships, but I do think it's pretty foundational that one of the keys to a strong relationship is healthy communication. It's just how we talk to each other. And sometimes it's just hard. Think about marriage. You're in a restaurant somewhere and you look over at a man and a woman and they're sitting across from each other and they're looking into each other's eyes and they're just talking a mile a minute. And every once in a while they reach over and they touch each other's hands. What do you immediately assume? They're on a date. That's right. They must be dating. And you look across the restaurant and you see two people and they're looking at everything except each other. And the only people they talk to is the waitress and, you know, and there's no eye contact and you think they must be married, probably out for their anniversary, right? I mean, what is it about conversation and communication and marriage that two people can have three-hour phone conversations when they're dating, and then they tie the knot, and they can hardly say 20 words to each other at a restaurant? You know, poor communication is a challenge, but it's not just a challenge in marriage. Every relationship, especially in the family, will be stronger if we just could learn a few key elements of conversation. I mean, think about what it takes to communicate. And I'm not talking about texting, Facebook, and Twitter, okay? I am talking about real communication where you actually look at each other and you talk to each other. Remember that? What does it take to do that well? There's several building blocks to conversation. I mean, obviously, the most obvious is words, right? Words aren't all there is to communication, but words are important. Sometimes people choose the right words, and sometimes, frankly, we don't choose the right words at all. Sometimes the words are okay, but the tone of voice, you know, the sarcasm, it just can ruin a perfectly good statement. And sometimes everything's just wrong, like in the video that we just watched. I showed you that whole long video because, man, they argue, and they belittle, and they spray each other. I mean, there's just everything is wrong with that dialogue. And when our kids were growing up, every year at Christmas, we watch the movie Home Alone. I mean, heck, I still watch the movie Home Alone every year at Christmas. Love that movie. Well, there's one point in the movie where Uncle Frank, who is a complete moron, says to 8-year-old Kevin, "Look what you did, you little jerk." And that just became a line. I'm just going to be honest. In our family, all we do is quote movies. We quote movies all the time. And the more of us who are together, the more movies we quote. We can, in one paragraph, quote three movies and name all three of them. I mean, it's just a weird thing about our family. So one day, Mackenzie, my daughter, was about 10 years old, and we were out somewhere at a restaurant, just the two of us, and I spilled something, which is what Kevin did in the movie. And she looked over at me and she said, "Look what you did, you little jerk." And we both busted out laughing. It was hilarious. But I said, "Mackenzie, you can never let anybody hear you talk to me that way, because they're not going to know that we're quoting a movie. They're not going to know we're just kidding. They're going to think you're a little jerk. I mean, you just can't talk to me like that." But words are one key to communication. But now listening is another key component, right? If all we do is talk, and man, we just make sure that we're getting our point across, and if we're not talking, we're just thinking about our comeback that we're going to say next as soon as the other person stops talking, you know, we're not really communicating, we're just unloading. Sometimes we need to keep our mouths shut and let the other person actually finish what they're trying to say. And this means we have to be careful not to interrupt. And let me also say, and this is really hard for me to say, I don't like saying this, but we don't have to outdo the other person's story or what they've just said, okay? I'm a competitive person. You tell a good story, I want to tell a better story. What's wrong with me? Sometimes we just need to let their story be the story, right? So listening is important. Timing with communication is really important. You know, many families make the mistake of talking about serious issues, life-impacting, difficult decisions, and they do it at a time when they're tired, they're hungry, they're just, you know, everybody's kind of crabby, and the timing is all wrong. Now, let me be honest and say, if you have kids at home, and you're thinking, we've got to find an uninterrupted three-hour block of time when everybody's well-rested and well-fed before we're going to have this conversation, it may be years before you ever talk about that topic, okay? There may not be a perfect moment, but there are better times than others. Location is a part of good communication. We need to be careful about having sensitive conversations in front of other people because it just makes everybody uncomfortable. And especially parents, we need to be careful with kids having tense conversations in front of them. It's just like disciplining your children in public just makes everybody uncomfortable. Well, some conversations can do that too. I was on a train one time in New York City, and there was a guy on the train who was breaking up with somebody. Actually, he was being broken up with. And he was very emotional, and he was very upset, and he was talking very loudly on his phone, and it was just weird. It was just really, really awkward. I felt bad for the guy, but at the same time, everybody's thinking, I wish he would talk a little more quietly. I mean, it was just really awkward. So location can be an important thing too. Private conversations ought to be done privately, and parents, we need to be cautious about this. Now, having said that, let me just kind of throw in an aside that also I think it's good for younger kids to see their parents communicating with each other. It's okay to problem solve together and to discuss things together. We learn about communication by watching people communicate, so that can be a healthy thing. We just want to be cautious about private things. Now, there's body language when it comes to communication. Man, if you're all tensed up and you're clenching your fists and just right up in somebody's face, that says so much no matter what words you choose. So body language is posture and it's facial expressions and all those things. And we need to kind of relax and be cautious with what we're communicating while we're talking. So there's words, there's listening, timing, location, body language. All these things, not an exhaustive list, but all those things play into what it means to communicate. And when it comes to relationships, especially in the home, right, I would contend with these building blocks, we can either build. Because every communication builds something. We're either building walls or we're building bridges. Okay? You'll hear me say this. I've said it over and over again. I'll keep saying it. We always are building either walls or bridges. And so when it comes to homeland security, we need to build a bridge, not a wall. That's the bottom line today. Build a bridge, not a wall. And it really is our choice. But why is it so hard? Well, you know, frankly, it often lies with men. Usually, but not always, women are more verbal than men. They're better at communicating than men are. Girls typically learn to talk more quickly than boys do. Most little boys can spend an entire afternoon and all they need are bam, bam, you know, all they need is sound effects. They do not need any words, and they can play together all afternoon long. And little girls love to talk, right? And we watch this in our kids, and the problem is it often carries over into adulthood. You know, one evening, this husband and wife were sitting around, and they decided to call some friends, see what they were doing. They call the friends up, and this lady says, oh, we're just drinking coffee and talking. So the woman hangs up the phone and she says to her husband, well, they're drinking coffee and talking. How come we never do that? And he said, well, put on a pot of coffee. So they put some coffee on. They sat down. They looked at each other for a minute. And finally he said, call her back. Find out what they're talking about. You know, guys, we probably could be a little better than that. You know, in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul wrote a letter to the church in Ephesus. And in chapter 4, he says a lot about how people communicate with each other. Now, to be fair to the text, he's talking to the church, and he's talking about how we communicate with our brothers and sisters in Christ at church. But so many of the things he says apply so well in the home as well. The principles we're going to look at center around building bridges, not walls. Okay, so let me just give you some principles that come from Ephesians chapter 4. The first thing is that we need to be transparent. Okay, let other people see the real you. Now, let me tell you quickly what being transparent does not mean. Okay? This is not a license to be obnoxious or to be critical or to be insensitive. I'm not suggesting the attitude that says, you know, this is just who I am. You can take me or leave me. I'm just going to be me. I'm going to say whatever I'm thinking and just let it out. Okay? That's not what we're talking about. Honest communication does not mean that we're rude or that we're callous in our conversation. Proverbs 29:11 says, a fool gives full vent to his anger, but a wise man keeps himself under control. A wise man is controlled. Wayne Smith was pastor for years in Lexington, Kentucky, and he said, a guy said to him one time at church, Wayne, I really don't think too much about what I'm going to say. I just shoot from the hip. And Wayne said, you ought to shoot from a little higher up, from the heart. You know, words are powerful, and we need to use them well. I mean, think about this. If a man criticizes his wife in public, he makes fun of her weight or of her cooking or of her clothes, and then he says, hey, just trying to be honest in the relationship. Well, you know, he's not building any kind of bridge at all in that relationship. At the same time, if a wife is constantly criticizing her husband, he's a lousy provider, he's lazy, he won't fix anything around the house. All the while, hey, just want to be honest, just want him to know how I feel. You know, she's undermining his esteem, but there's no strengthening to the relationship. Ephesians chapter 4 says this in verses 2 and 3. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. Unity and peace. Doesn't that sound nice for the home? Verse 15 goes on to say, speaking the truth in love, we will in all things grow up into Him who is the head, that is Christ. If we want to be like Christ, part of it is speaking the truth, yes, but we do it in love. And then verse 25 of the same chapter, each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to his neighbor, for we're all members of one body. If we're going to have unity, we have to be honest with each other. And so he talks about being gentle and patient, loving, truthful, united. All those things in relationships mean we have to be open and honest with each other. We need to be kind to each other, but we need to let people know who we really are. We have to be vulnerable and transparent with people if we're going to have healthy relationships and solid communication. And guys, we have to work on this. Yeah, I'm just being honest. You might need to come home and talk about your day. Not just, and you can't even just say what you did today because they want to know how you feel about what you did today. And I know you love talking about your feelings, right? But you know, did that make you happy? Or did that make you discouraged, frustrated? Were you excited? Were you transported with rage? You know, what was it like experiencing whatever it was? What do you wish was different? What do you hope for? What are your dreams? You know, it's not easy. You know, Gail and I were married about 10 or 12 years before we really figured out that we respond to stress differently. When I'm stressed out, I just want space. I just need some solitude. Just let me be inside my head. I just want it to be kind of quiet. And when she's stressed out, she wants encouragement and affirmation. So for probably a decade of marriage, I would get stressed out and she would lavish me with attention and she'd get stressed out and I would just steer clear. And neither one of us was giving the other one what they needed. And so it's about realizing as you get to know each other, you know, who you are. And I needed to be honest with her, and she needed to be honest with me. Now, we struggle because I use up a lot of words during the day, and a lot of times I get home at night, I don't have many words left, and I'm just kind of done with words. And that's not healthy either. So building a bridge, not a wall, means that we have to let people see inside of us, but we also need to see inside of them, right? It's not just about them seeing the real us. It's about discovering who they are, what makes them tick, what do you like, how can I make you feel better, right? So see, a second suggestion about building a bridge is that you want to be attentive, right? You want to be attentive wherever you are. Have you ever been in a conversation and that happens? Hello, it's like we're talking here. Why are you looking at your phone? Why are you watching a video about a cat doing push-ups? Hello, you know what I'm talking about? Listen, I love smartphones. I love my phone. Man, I get a lot more done. I can stand in line now and read a book. It's amazing. I can sit at a stoplight and read a book. Anyway, you know, I get lost looking for the dining room, but Google Maps I can find anywhere. I'm just telling you, I love my phone. I can look stuff up, you know, I mean, it's awesome. But have you ever seen that bumper sticker that says hang up and drive? You know, listen, we are so obsessed with technology, and so many people struggle with this that they're so buried in their phone that there's no opportunity for real communication. Now, we like to call it multitasking, but the reality is we're often so distracted by texting and email and Instagram and Twitter and just surfing the internet that we can't fully engage. We need to focus on focusing. We need to be attentive in conversations. We need to make eye contact with people and try to look interested. I mean, I know families that say, look, no phones at the table. All right, we're going to sit down together and we're going to have an uninterrupted block of time to have a meal together. You know, we need to carve out some time every day where we're connecting to the person sitting next to us rather than the person who's texting us. And if you're like, you know, we never talk. Well, just start asking some questions. You know, what's your favorite movie? What's your favorite place to visit? If you could go anywhere, if money were no object, where would you go in the entire world? What's your favorite food? There's things to talk about if we just would get outside of ourselves a little bit. If all else fails, listen, if everything else fails, just say something like this. So what did you think of that incredibly informative and deeply moving sermon we heard last Sunday? You know, just start a conversation. I'm just saying, that's one suggestion. Okay, has this ever happened to you? And this is a married couple thing, but just give me a minute here. This married couple's driving down the interstate, and they pass a billboard that says Dairy Queen. All right, and the wife says, honey, would you like some ice cream? And he says, no, I don't think so. And they drive the next 20 minutes, another word is not spoken. And finally he says, is something wrong? Nope. It just feels like there's some tension. No. Are you sure there's nothing wrong? Oh, you know what's wrong. No, really, I have no idea what's wrong. I said I wanted ice cream and you were just too rude, wouldn't even stop. You didn't say you wanted ice cream. You asked me if I wanted ice cream. Well, you knew what I meant. Ever had that conversation before? Now, whose fault is that? Well, truthfully, most women feel like their husbands ought to pick up on signals like that because women are more intuitive and perceptive than men, and they assume that men are going to be that way and men aren't. And guys are thinking, you know, I can't read minds. How am I supposed to figure this out? And so there's tension. And it just gets to be difficult. Remember that book that came out a few years ago, Women Are From Venus, Men Are Wrong? Remember that book? I'm just kidding. You know, you look at that Dairy Queen scenario and you say, look, I'm not a mind reader. That's what guys like to say. But you know, maybe there are some things that the guy could have done differently. Maybe some things she could have done differently. You know, one suggestion that I think would solve everything is just stop at every Dairy Queen. I mean, I think that's one idea. But what if when the wife said, would you like to have some ice cream, if the husband said, I don't know, do you? You know, maybe what you're thinking at this moment is as important as what I'm thinking. So maybe I could ask you what you're thinking about this. That's one suggestion. Maybe then he gets a little ice cream and it's not so icy in the car and later on. Or, you know, that happy wife, happy life, you all heard that. Okay, maybe to the ladies, maybe you could say, instead of do you want some ice cream, you know, hon, I think I'd like to have some ice cream. Or maybe you just grab the wheel at the exit and just pull to the right. I don't know, but just help us get it because we're not as sharp as you are. Okay, my parents celebrated their 60th wedding anniversary just this past May, but I remember years ago, we were planning their 50th. My sister and brother and I, we were planning their 50th wedding anniversary, and we were making a list of all the people that we needed to send invitations to. And my sister said, I ran into this friend of mine today, and I told her all about the reception. I invited her and everything. We need to send her an invitation. And I said, why do we need to send her an invitation? You just invited her. She already knows when it is and she's going to come. Why does she need an invitation? And my sister gave me a four-word explanation that made it perfectly clear. She said, because she's a woman. Actually, that does not make it clear at all to me. I still don't get it. I feel like I have a feminine side, but why do you want another piece of mail that you have to open when you already know about the invitation? Because she's a woman, and that's just the way it is. Okay, and so there's something about getting inside each other's heads and understanding each other a little bit more, right? I want to be attentive to what your needs are. If we're going to build strong relationships, we need to get inside their world. And we need to let them into our world too. Now, James 1:19 says, everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. Quick to listen, slow to speak. I don't like that verse very much. I'm just not very good at it. But it's an important part of getting inside their world and understanding what makes them tick. Communication's about building bridges, not walls. Okay, here's a third suggestion. Be alert. And this means we deal with conflict as quickly as possible. Don't let things fester. I read an Associated Press article several years ago. It was entitled, Open Fire During Marriage Counseling. A husband and wife in Fresno, California showed up separately to their marriage counseling session, and before it was all over, they both pulled out guns and shot at each other. Okay? The tension started when he showed up late and he had a beer in his hand, and the marriage counselor said, you know, it was a domestic dispute, then the fireworks started. Fortunately, he had been drinking. He was a lousy shot. You know, I don't think they killed each other, but I don't think their marriage survived, right? Now, I realize you're probably not pulling the gun out at the table and taking shots at the people around the dinner table, but the reality is a lot of us sweep things under the rug, and we don't deal with it, and things pile up, and all of a sudden there's an explosion of some kind. It may not involve bullets, but there's a problem. What happens in the home is that we don't deal with things. We don't keep the account current, if you understand what I mean by that. But instead, all these little things build up, and then there's a big problem. Listen to what Paul said in Ephesians 4:26. In your anger, you're going to get angry. It's okay. But in your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you're still angry, and do not give the devil a foothold. When we brood and we stew over issues in the family and we refuse to deal with things up front, we're giving the devil a foothold in our lives. We're opening the door to bitterness and depression and resentment, even hatred. Suppose you get a splinter in your finger and you know it's going to hurt to pull it out, so you think, I'll just ignore it. And you try to ignore it, but what happens? 3 days later, you wake up in the middle of the night, your finger's swollen to twice its size, there's infection in there, and now your whole hand hurts, and you're thinking, it still has to come out, and now it's going to hurt a whole lot worse. I wish I'd have taken it out 3 days ago. And we do this kind of stuff in relationships, right? I don't want to deal with that. I'll just kind of pretend like that's not an issue. And pretty soon, there's infection, and it just gets messier and messier. So you got to deal with it. But here's the deal. Getting your way is not the priority in dealing with conflict. Winning the argument is not the priority. Living in a peaceful, frigid coexistence is not the priority. Building a bridge to the other person is a priority, right? The relationship means more than whatever problem it is that we're dealing with right now. And so we have to deal with things as they come along. Don't go to bed angry, he says. You may not sleep for 3 days, but daggone it, deal with whatever it is that's the problem. Otherwise, you're building walls, and you don't want to do that. Okay, look at verses 31 and 32. Get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling, and slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as in Christ God forgave you. Now, that's a lot of words, but just as a quick final point, I would just say, be encouraging. All right, say something positive every day. Kindness, compassion, forgiveness. Those are the kind of things that build bridges. Ephesians 4:29, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit them. Moms and dads, husbands, wives, brothers and sisters, think about the home. And then just think about friendships. We all need to know somebody's on our side, right? Somebody's pulling for us. We need encouragement. We need to give encouragement. We need to receive it. Sometimes little jabs and criticisms become our main source of conversation. But Paul said, use words that will build others up according to their needs. And we all need some affirmation. Now, let me just be quick to say that encouragement is not the same thing as flattery. Okay? Flattery disguises itself as encouragement, but it's usually kind of syrupy and insincere. Does the name Eddie Haskell mean anything to you? Remember him? Right. So what's the difference between phony flattery and genuine encouragement? Well, it comes down to motives. Why am I saying what I'm saying? If I give my wife Gail a compliment because I want to build up her self-esteem and let her know how much I love her, well, then she's going to receive that. She'll be encouraged by that. It's for her benefit. That's a good thing. But if I pay her a compliment to benefit myself in some way, I've done something stupid and I'm trying to get her not to be so mad about it, and so I try to butter her up a little bit, or maybe I'm trying to get her to do me a favor, and so I say a few things that I can come up with just so I'm kind of, you know, paving the way to get what I want. Well, that's not encouragement. That's flattery, and it's pretty phony. Encouragement is a great tool of communication, but it has to benefit that other person. It's not for ourselves. So healthy communication. We could talk about this stuff for weeks. It's so pivotal to healthy relationships. And so we do it best when we're attentive to other people's needs and we're being transparent. We're choosing our words and our language and everything well. We're not critical. We're building up, not tearing down. We're building bridges, not walls, right? And then you think about the principles. Be transparent. Let people see into who you are. It's okay. Be attentive. You know, wherever you are, be all there in the conversation. Be alert. If there's a problem, let's deal with it quickly. And then be encouraging. Man, just say something positive. I mean, I'm convinced that if we would learn these kinds of principles and put them into practice, things would be healthier at home. Now, let me say one last thing about communication, and then we're going to close. One of the best ways I think that we can strengthen communication at home is to communicate with God together with family and friends. I know this is tough, but I'm talking about really praying with people out loud together. Join hands together and pray, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be formal. It doesn't have to be flowery. There is no right way and wrong way to pray. It's just about talking to God, but we do it together. Dennis Rainey was the executive director at Family Life magazine, a Christian magazine. And he said that Family Life conducted a study, and they learned that there is a direct correlation between prayer and marital satisfaction. Most satisfied married couples, they discovered, pray together regularly. And he concluded by saying prayer is one of the most intimate forms of communication that God gave us because it knits our hearts together. We're not just talking to God, we're talking to God with people that we love, and that can be powerful. I want you to listen one last time to these verses that we've already read. I'm going to read them from a different translation this time. This is the New Living Translation, just a little different perspective. He said, don't use foul or abusive language. Let everything you say be good and helpful so that your words will be an encouragement to those who hear them. And do not bring sorrow to God's Holy Spirit by the way you live. Remember, He's identified you as His own, guaranteeing that you'll be saved on the day of redemption. So get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger, harsh words, slander, as well as all types of evil behavior. Instead, be kind to each other, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, just as God through Christ has forgiven you. Friends, words are so powerful. You ever thought about how powerful words are? I mean, you take 26 letters and you arrange them in random order, and it can change the world. Man, with words, we build up people and we tear them down. With words, we create and we destroy. With words, we can make people laugh and we can make people cry. With words, we can make people feel welcome and accepted, and we can make people feel rejected and marginalized. With words, we wage war, and with words, we make peace. With words, we spew out hatred, and with words, we sow seeds of compassion. But man, words are incredibly powerful. I told you about my daughter Mackenzie and her line, "Look what you did, you little jerk." Well, let me tell you another thing to give you another perspective on my relationship with her. When Mackenzie was about 4 years old, we had a bedtime routine together, and I would say prayers with her, and I would tuck her in. That's my first selfie, by the way. I was holding a 35-millimeter camera, you know, back in the day. So there you go. So anyway, she's 24 now. So I would say prayers with her. I would tuck her in, and we would listen to Bob Carlyle's song, Butterfly Kisses, right? It's that tearjerker daddy-daughter song, and we listened to it about 1,000 times together. We did it every night for a long time. And one night, I had prayed with her, And I had tucked her in, and I leaned over the bed, and I gave her a kiss. And she took her little hands, and she put both hands on my cheeks. And she looked me right in the eye, and she said, "Every time I look at you, I just love you." And I remember, because words are powerful, powerful. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is useful for building others up according to their needs. We build bridges, not walls.